I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this fall, Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane's law license was temporarily suspended by the state Supreme Court. The Senate is currently determining whether she can be removed from office. She's been charged with revealing secret grand jury information and lying about it under oath. Kane has released crude, misogynist, racist, and homophobic emails sent between prosecutors, judges, and government employees. Some of them lost their jobs, some resigned, and others have been reprimanded. Kathleen Kane says she's the victim of an old boys' network. Meanwhile, an investigation into Supreme Court Justice Michael Aiken's emails has been called into question because of conflict of interest. And there have been calls for three prosecutors who used to work in the Attorney General's office and now work for the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office to resign because of their offensive emails. Well, we begin our conversation with Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY, a blogger at Newsworks.org. And Dave, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty.
This is a very complicated story, but it goes back about 5 or 6 years in the Attorney General's office, where these emails were living on what, a server?
Yeah, they were captured. They were part of the State Attorney General's office, you know, IT system. And the reason that we know about them is that when Kathleen Kane ran for Attorney General in 2012, she campaigned on a very energetic criticism of the Sandusky child abuse investigation and promised once in office to review that investigation. And so she hired a very respected former federal prosecutor, Jeffrey Moulton, to conduct a thorough review of the investigation. And in the course of that, he retrieved, you know, thousands and thousands of emails which had thought to have been deleted. He managed to recover them and found this really objectionable, offensive material. It was irrelevant to the purpose of his inquiry, which was to decide whether the Sandusky investigation was conducted professionally. But he provided them to the Attorney General, and she eventually, selectively, released some of them, and that's why we are where we are today.
And I don't want to be sensational here. I have looked at some of these emails, and we are talking in many ways, not all of them, Dave, but in many ways we are talking about pornography.
Oh, absolutely. Pornography and racially insensitive and homophobic stuff. And it's hard to believe that as recently as 2008, anyone would be kind of trading that material, particularly on a work email. But they did.
But they did. And I mean, it reveals a whole host of things, and one of which we'll spend a fair amount of time talking about in this hour of the show, which is about the relationship between prosecutors and judges. What's your take on that?
Well, it's interesting that this has emerged recently. There was a piece in the Legal Intelligencer last week by Peter Vira, a former U.S. attorney, who said, wait a minute, apart from however objectionable this material might be and whatever discipline might be merited for those who participated in it, what does it say about the relationships among judges and prosecutors and attorneys who might see each other in court and be involved in legal matters if they are so comfortable with each other that over a period of years they could share this highly sensitive stuff? I mean, maybe they thought it was funny, but it's not the kind of thing you would send to somebody unless you were pretty close to and pretty sure that they were, you know, you had some kind of level of confidence between you. And what he says is this raises a serious question about whether there's too cozy a relationship, particularly between prosecutors and judges, and whether there might have been ex parte communications, that is to say, communications in legal matters in which not all parties were involved. Maybe even leaks, whatever. Who knows what kind of conduct might have occurred among people who were this comfortable sharing confidential information with one another.
And this comfortable because of the kind of information that was shared. It wasn't, you know, let's meet for dinner somewhere. This is the fact that people were able, felt comfortable with each other, trading images and offensive material back and forth.
Yeah, scores and scores of raunchy communications is not something you would just send to everybody. Presumably you would send that to somebody you felt pretty close to.
Does it raise – I know you're not a lawyer, but does it raise questions about some of the the findings of a court if there were some back and forth between some of the prosecutors and judges?
Potentially it does. At least that's the case being made by Pete Vira. And I actually spoke with former state Supreme Court Justice Ron Castile on Friday, and he said, yeah, this absolutely raises a serious question about whether these relationships were too cozy. Now, let's be clear, this doesn't prove there was improper ex parte communications. Judges were lawyers before they were lawyers. And this is a state where we elect judges and we elect county prosecutors. And so they kind of live in a world of relationships and political relationships. And the fact that they may be friendly, even very friendly, friendly enough to trade all this raunchy stuff, doesn't prove that they were involved in improper legal contact. But it does raise a question. And so what do you do about it? Well, what Vira says and what Castile says and what others are saying is you need to appoint a credible investigator with no ties to the Pennsylvania legal community to get to the bottom of this. You interview these people. You look at the cases that they had with the judges or others that they communicated with and go carefully over that material and ask them under oath what kinds of conversations that they had.
Well, let me ask you about Justice Aiken. He received and sent email the Judicial Conduct Board last year, basically gave him a pass. There were no, you know, obvious improprieties. They called some of the material mildly pornographic. But then we find out that there were people serving on this board that had ties to Justice Aiken.
Well, what one member of the board we now know actually got some of the pornographic material. I mean, the really jaw-dropping conflict is that Bob Gracie, who is the chief counsel of the Judicial Conduct Board, was a friend of Justice Aiken and actually worked on his retention campaign. And the fact that he could pass judgment and not disclose this is just sort of one of these cases that says this is way too much of an insider's club. It bears mentioning that there's a big debate between the Judicial Conduct Board and Kathleen Kane's office as to whether they originally provided her with all of the troubling material about Justice Aiken. And if you go back to the point at which this thing is just so mind-bogglingly complicated.
It
but
is.
If you go back to the point at which the state's disciplinary committee for lawyers recommended the suspension of Kathleen Kane's law license, something which would be voted on by the Supreme Court, there was a story in which the Daily News quoted a source close to Kathleen Kane's legal team as saying that if they indeed voted to remove her, she would ask for the recusal of Justice Aiken because he had more pornographic stuff. The point I'm making is that it was after the Supreme Court voted to suspend her law license that Kathleen Kane then forwarded 1,500 new emails to the Judicial Conduct Board, suggesting that the emails were used as a weapon, essentially. All this is a big, complicated mess. But one of the things that you draw from it is who could possibly appoint an independent prosecutor? I mean, the Judicial Conduct Board is clearly tainted by its conduct so far. I mean, the state Supreme Court hasn't exactly given us its finest hour in the way it's handled this with Justice McCaffrey before. So you have a really interesting question where if there is a need to reassure the public by examining these relationships, who actually conducts that and who appoints them?
And we do have three new members of the state Supreme Court, so it will be interesting to see what they're able to do with this. You mentioned Kathleen Kane, Dave, and one of the, I guess, critiques of her is that she seems to have released these pornographic emails at strategic times. And it seems that there's pressure on her now to just release them all, dump them all out.
Right.
I mean, the question is, are they or aren't they? I mean, has everything been released?
Are they or what? Are they?
Has everything been released that she has?
I don't know that we know that. The state Supreme Court has ruled that they are not public records and subject to disclosure under the right to know law, but they said she has the discretion to release them if she wants to. And I think – and her pattern has clearly been to be selective in the emails that she releases and in the discipline she imposes. I mean, people are on her staff still who participated in this stuff. So it's hard to find clean hands in any of this.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening here in Philadelphia. Now, three former prosecutors who worked for the Attorney General's office now work for Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams in his office. There are calls from Senator Hardy Williams that they should be fired. Some members of city council now will be speaking with a representative in about 10 or 15 minutes. What's happening here then in Philadelphia, the DA's office?
Well, When it emerged that Frank Fina, who has been Kathleen Kane's arch enemy in all of this, I mean, he was the former prosecutor who actually initiated the investigation that led to criminal charges against her. When it emerged that he and a couple of others had participated in this email exchanges, had received and sent some of it, it was up to their boss, District Attorney Seth Williams, to decide what to do. And on late Friday of Labor Day weekend, he decided, nope, the only discipline will be sensitivity training. And we don't even know whether that's happened. I have to say the district attorney's public relations office has gone dark. They don't even acknowledge media inquiries at this point.
So and I should add that we got no response from them whatsoever.
Right. Right.
I'm looking at a piece that Katie Culinary had on Newsworks raising questions about whether sensitivity training had been given or not, whether these three now members of the district attorney's office had actually received any sensitivity training. It looks like it's not clear. Or they did
right.
not.
Right. If it has, they haven't talked about it. A source with some information from the office indicated to her that they had reached out to someone who could provide this, but it hadn't been scheduled.
So what happens next? Or perhaps even a better thing to ask you, Dave, is what are you looking at? I mean, what questions do you have?
I joke to people that I've submitted a right not to know request about Kathleen Kane. The story has just developed so many kind of weird tangents. I mean, obviously the big question next is what does the state Senate do, which is considering exercising this really unusual constitutional power to seek the removal of her from office. And if that happens, then at least her fate as the attorney general is decided. But there's still a criminal case against her to be resolved. And then, you know, what happens to Justice Aiken and his emails? I mean, I think we'll be dealing with the fallout of this for a long time. And I know we're just about out of time here.
Go
but
ahead.
I will just quickly note that that Kathleen Kane released some emails two weeks ago, about a judge named Barry Feudale, whose relations to this I won't burden this conversation with now, but he suggests that he had a very close relationship with Frank Fina, this former prosecutor. And the email suggests that Fina and Feudale were involved in providing some confidential information to the two Inquirer reporters who have broken most of the Kane stories so far, raising the possibility that this prosecutor and this judge, who were the prosecutor and judge on the Sandusky child abuse investigation and on the corruption investigation in the state legislature, that they may have had a very close relationship and may have been willing to share confidential information with reporters. Now, the emails don't prove that. I've spoken to Feudale, and he has assured me that is not the case. I've tried to reach Fina. He doesn't return my calls. But what you are seeing is that the attorneys in the Sandusky case are saying this is a red flag. This suggests to us that as this long investigation against Sandusky was proceeding, that stories appeared which might have been leaked by prosecutors in an attempt to inflame the public and generate more allegations of abuse against their client. Now, whether they're going to be able to open up this material, whether it'll have any impact on the Sandusky conviction, nobody knows. But it's another strange outgrowth of this whole mess.
Well, Dave, I always appreciate you coming on Radio Times. I know it's a very complicated story. We shoehorned it into 12 and a half minutes. Thank you for joining us on the show. And that senior reporter at WHYY, a blogger for Newsworks.org, Dave Davies. Thank you, Dave.
Sure thing.
We're going to take a very short break and then continue this conversation with two more guests we have waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Maz-Cohen. Just a recap here. The fallout from Pennsylvania's so-called Porngate scandal has continued. It all began when Pennsylvania's Attorney General Kathleen Kane released emails sent between state employees. We're talking about judges, prosecutors, and others that were pornographic in nature, also containing racist and misogynist and other types of bigoted content. And there have been calls for resignations. I just talked with Dave Davies to give us essentially an update on what has been happening. Joining us now here in our Philadelphia studio is Deborah Weinstein, founder and president of the Weinstein Firm. It's a law firm here in Philadelphia, and they conduct anti-harassment and sensitivity training for employers and for individuals. And for the past 17 years, she's taught employment law as a lecturer at the Wharton Business School's Department of Legal Studies and Business Ethics. And Deborah Weinstein, nice to have you with us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. And Joining us by telephone is Bruce Ledowitz, and he's Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor of Law at Duquesne University School of Law in Pittsburgh. He's also co-director of the Duquesne University School of Law's Pennsylvania Constitution website. And Bruce Ledowitz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin with you, if I could, Bruce. We're talking about an attorney general with a suspended license, a Senate trying to determine if they can oust her, a governor calling for her to step down. We now have racist and sexist emails being traded between prosecutors, members of the judiciary on government computers. Have we ever been here before in Pennsylvania?
Oh, well, not, we have had plenty of scandals. Remember, we had a justice resign from the court last fall over this very same scandal in a general sense, Justice McCaffrey. And prior to that, we had a one of our justices convicted and of crimes with misuse of office. So, you know, there's plenty of scandal about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and always has been. It's unusual to have the Attorney General's office compromised at the same time, and it adds to the difficulty of resolving the issue because now people are calling for an independent prosecutor, and what you would normally think of doing in a situation like this where the Supreme Court's involved is have the Attorney General appoint a special prosecutor, but of course that's impossible at the moment.
Mm. Let me turn to you, Deborah, and we both got here a press release from the District Attorney's office this morning. District Attorney Seth Williams and numerous other office supervisors and staff, including Frank Fina, Mark Costanza, and Patrick Blessington, attended a full-day training seminar given by renowned lecturer, author, and president and CEO of Legacy Business Cultures, Paul Mashenko, and this was on Friday. So this was just a couple of days ago before obviously doing the show today. This is something that you do. What is the kind of, I guess, training or sensitivity training that you think would be effective to deal with the fallout from this Porngate scandal?
Well, let me say that sensitivity training is a generic term. Before talking about what it generally is and what we do, it's not generally thought of as being discipline. And Dave Davies just made the comment that they had been Seth Williams had said they had been sent to sensitivity training. That was their discipline. So I think that sensitivity training is generally thought of as remedial. It's a remedy for something that should never have happened. Now that the employers found out that it has occurred, they have a legal duty to make sure that that it stops and it doesn't happen again. So, you know, that's the purpose of it, is to make individuals more sensitive to other people, to raise their awareness to what the code of conduct is in their particular workplace, and to appreciate the diversity and sensitivity of the people that they work with so that they don't go around needlessly offending people.
Well, and I must say, and we were talking about this before going on the air, we have all looked at some of this material, and it's just kind of amazing to me that especially people in high levels of government in this case felt perfectly comfortable trading and sharing email that's clearly pornographic. There's racist, misogynist, some of it is homophobic. How common do you think this is, Deborah?
Well, actually, this level of conduct, we really don't see very often anymore. We really don't. The level of arrogance that these people must have to have engaged in this kind of communication is really staggering to me. And I work with I do individual sensitivity training with people who are harassers or alleged to be harassers, whether it be sexual harassment or harassment based on race, religion, national origin, whatever. I've been doing this for a long time, and we really do not see this level of egregious communication. If you have not seen it, the National Organization of Women website has you can go on and look at it. I thought when I first heard about this, that there might be some issue. You know, is this over the line? How bad is this? Was this really pornography? Well, you know, there's a lot been written and said about what's pornography.
Exactly.
We know it
when
you see it. But let me just say that there is absolutely no doubt about this. This is really awful. And I have to say that I, as an employment attorney, was particularly offended by communication. There were some emails in there that the subject line was performance. And then there were photographs of women engaging in oral sex with men. And the punchline for some of these photographs was, you know, this is the kind of thing that a good employee does for her boss. So query whether, you know, how does a woman in the working for the city of Philadelphia have one of these guys as her supervisor today?
Bruce, let me go back to you. And a question I actually put to Dave Davies, but I'd like to put to you as well, which is there something different between people, government officials in this case, trading pornographic email and or deciding what movie they're going to go to or what who's going to meet whom at the golf game in terms of the relationship between prosecutors and members of the judiciary?
Well, it's much worse. In addition to everything about the emails that has come to light that is offensive, there is the corruption, particularly of the judiciary. Why are prosecutors and judges exchanging emails of such an intimate nature? Obviously, very much in the old boys context. You couldn't possibly send something like this unless you had total understanding that it wouldn't go anywhere else. So it speaks of a chumminess that you shouldn't have between prosecutors and judges in the first place. And in the second place, although we don't know, and I want to emphasize, we don't know. I don't know what Michael Aiken, Justice Aiken, received and sent. Obviously, he was cleared prematurely last year by the Judicial Conduct Board. But I think the first step has to be that total release of all the emails at issue. I mean, it's bizarre that we're talking about actions being taken against Justice Aiken when, in fact, the public, I don't anyway, still don't know what he did.
Well, is that the Judicial Conduct Board? Then they should release it? Does it also?
Whatever they've got. They have rules about confidentiality. And I think, you know, Justice Aiken's unfortunate suggestion last week that the whole matter should go to the Court of Judicial Discipline right away, for which he got slammed because,
yes,
of course, he shouldn't be directing anything. But I think, in his defense, he knew that the Judicial Conduct Board is bound by confidentiality, but the Court of Judicial Discipline is not. And he may have actually wanted to have everything come to light. But obviously, everything has to come to light. I don't mean it should all be published in the newspapers, but I do mean that the public has a right, if it wants to see these things, to know what our public officials have actually been engaging in.
We have a guest who's going to join us, but a question to you, Deborah. From what you know, is what they are alleged to have done illegal? Is it illegal to use work or government servers or computers to trade, share the kind of emails we've been talking about?
Well, it's definitely would be a infraction of the either the state or the city of Philadelphia's anti-harassment policy. But remember, those policies are not law, number one. And number two, they're generally designed to be zero tolerance. So to be actionable would likely be, in most instances, depending on what had happened, a higher standard. So I don't think that there's any criminal conduct here, and I think that that may be why these guys were so cavalier about what they did. But it's definitely inappropriate and prohibited by their employer's rules.
A hostile work environment, though?
Well, let's just think about that. Even though this would be, and I have the city's policy in front of me, and it's definitely would be prohibited by the city's anti-harassment policy, it also would be prohibited by electronic communication policies just to do this. Okay, so when I first heard about this, I thought, well, is this really sexual harassment? After all, you know, nobody has complained about it. There's no complainant. Has anybody been has said that they are offended by it? So, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it.
this applies there as well.
Right. That's where we are. But I don't think there's any doubt that this is conduct that's forbidden. Generally speaking, it's forbidden. And those of you who are listening, this generally forbidden by your employers,
sure.
And has been for many years. People have been fired for engaging in similar conduct or even much less egregious conduct than this.
Bruce, do you want to weigh in on this at all?
The related question is for Justice Aiken. Is this this activity, whatever it turns out he did, is this a violation of the judicial ethics code, and should he be removed from office? Now, the problem in the first place is, A, we don't know exactly what he did. We don't know what emails he received and sent. And secondly, when he was cleared last year, it was in a written opinion by the Judicial Conduct Board on the premise that he had received emails and not sent them. And this, from the point of view of the Judicial Conduct Board, and probably from the point of view of gender harassment, that would make a difference. You know, I mean, if I receive emails and don't send them, you know, presumably that could mean that I just, you know, delete them and don't even look at them. You could ask, well, why are you getting these emails from your friends and not doing anything about it? Fair enough. But anyway, that premise is apparently false. Apparently he did send emails, although I don't know that, but that's what I've been reading in the media. And that's what I mean when I say we really have to first discover what the facts are before you could even talk about whether this is a violation of the judicial code.
And that's Bruce Ledowitz, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs, also a professor of law at Duquesne University School of Law. Deborah Weinstein with us here in our Philadelphia studio, the founder and president of the Weinstein Firm. And she works with individuals, employers on sensitivity and anti-harassment training. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. An explosion of emails and tweets I see as well. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Joining us now is Nina Ahmed, and she's president of Philadelphia Now. That's the local chapter of the National Organization of Women. And Nina Ahmed, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me. And I just want to make a correction. We are the National Organization for Women, not women.
You would think we would know that by now, and I apologize for that, Nina. You and others in the city have called for the firing of Frank Fina, Mark Costanza, and Pat Blessington. They all worked in the Attorney General's office. They all now work in the District Attorney's office. On what grounds?
Well, we think that in these people who hold such high office are held to a higher standard. This is about a loss of public trust in these folks who are sitting and deciding what cases are going to be prosecuted and, you know, how we as the public are going to be treated. And if they're sitting and participating in a ring with complete impunity that they can talk about, laugh about, and have these opinions about the public they're serving, it really calls to question how they're doing their job. So we are very concerned here. And you know, the whole country is going through this process of reevaluating how law enforcement works. And we are taking a very critical look at this in Philadelphia. If Philadelphia wants to be a world-class city, we can't have these kinds of folks sitting in high office demeaning people such as you and me, and people of color, which is, I'm a person of color. Anybody who is not them has been, you know, the brunt of this. And it So that's one.
And well, you know what, Nina, let me just jump in here, only because I know we have to say goodbye to you in just a couple of minutes. This, of course, happened when they didn't work for the district attorney's office. As far as we know, they worked for the attorney general. And according to a press release that we just got, they did have some sensitivity training on Friday. Does that in any way deal with what your concerns are?
No, because we would like to know how these people were hired. There's a vetting process for people who come into such high office. Did they disclose that they participated in this kind of heinous ring of such manner? Were they asked about this? This information was out there. If anybody did any due diligence before these three people were hired into these positions, they would have found out what was going on. There was an EEOC complaint filed while they were there by a woman who worked there about a hospitable environment. So this is not something that was hidden from the public. You just have to dig deep and find out. And I would think that the district attorney would do a very thorough job before they hire people of this nature. So I think it goes to say that this is not considered to be inappropriate behavior by both the district attorney and the folks engaged in it. And that is a very serious problem for us in Philadelphia.
Have you had it about a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, Nina? Have you had a chance to talk to the district attorney here in Philadelphia, Seth Williams?
We did. I did on the Friday before Labor Day when he chose to release his statement, which in itself was a slap in our face, saying that we're just going to, brush it under the carpet. So, and then since then, in fact, he has sent me three text messages asking for us to engage. And then the very last one, I've asked what would be the agenda of this meeting, and mm-hmm. I haven't heard back from him. And it really is about the fact that he had already decided, we weren't part of a discussion to say, how do we deal with this? This was, I've decided, here it is, deal with it. And I think that just shows the lack of respect he has for people who have been affected by this.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times. And I should say to our listeners, we did call. We also emailed the district attorney's office, and we did not hear back from them. Nina Ahmad, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. You're welcome. President of the Philadelphia chapter of NOW, that's the local chapter of the National Organization for Women. And our guests, Deborah Weinstein and Bruce Ledowitz, staying with us for the rest of the hour. Much more to talk about after this very short break, including the fact that the Attorney General's law license was suspended and their questions about her future job. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Deborah Weinstein. She's the founder and president of the Weinstein Firm. It's a firm that conducts anti-harassment and sensitivity training. And for the past, looks like 17 years, she's taught employment law as a lecturer at the Wharton Business School's Department of Legal Studies and Business Ethics. Joining us by telephone, Bruce Ledowitz, Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor of Law at Duquesne University School of Law in Pittsburgh. He's also co-director of the Duquesne University School of Law's Pennsylvania Constitution website. And we got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. Bruce, I want to put something to you. While we've been talking about these emails that have been traded back and forth, meanwhile, we have an attorney general whose law license was suspended. We have a governor who says, that basically she should lose her job. Now the Senate is trying to determine whether there are things that they can do to, I guess, relieve her of her duties as the attorney general. Going back, do you think the Supreme Court overstepped its authority when it suspended her law license, considered she had not been charged with a crime yet?
Well, she had been charged.
Oh, she'd charged, but she'd not been found guilty of a crime.
Right. And I don't hold any brief for the attorney general. She should have resigned long ago when she was charged. I think the Senate will probably conclude that she cannot do her job with a suspended license, and they have the power to remove her under what's called direct address. But having said all that, I don't know any experts in legal ethics who think that her suspension was fair. Under the existing precedent, under the rule under which she was suspended, requires emergency action, usually to protect the client funds. And she was accused of wrongdoing in the past, and whatever she did, there was no emergency. And there wasn't any reason why the court could not have allowed the judicial process to work out the way they do for in crimes involving any other lawyer. And so I have no understanding of how they could have suspended her. However, having suspended her, she cannot do her job as Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And she is throwing into question all the activities of the Attorney General's office since her license was suspended. She's acting in a reckless and irresponsible way in not resigning. If she had the interests of the people of Pennsylvania ahead of her own, she would resign simply to take the cloud off of the actions of her office.
Well, and this goes back to 2014 when it was these emails were discovered at the Attorney General's office. Something like 31 employees, a number of employees, I should say, were either fired or terminated, or some resigned, some were suspended without pay. Looking at the three lawyers here in Philadelphia working for the district attorney's office, should they be disciplined? Is there something the bar or the legal system can do in the Commonwealth?
I doubt it. I mean, I think whatever would happen with regard to them would involve probably the actions of the district attorney's office itself. I don't see how the system can discipline them before it deals with Justice Aiken. I mean, it would be kind of unfair to go after the underlings, so to speak, before you resolve the matter of the people at the top. So I don't think that any action will be taken by the ethics authorities in regard to them, or at least I haven't heard that any will.
Right. You want to weigh in on that, Deborah, at all?
Yeah. So you know, there were people who were fired, terminated from their jobs as a result of the same conduct that we're talking about, the judge and these attorneys having engaged in. It seems like that the standard should be the same. And in fact, it should be a higher standard. I was trying to analyze whether we, as a self-regulating profession, we attorneys are, whether there was any attorney discipline that would come into play here. And I don't see it, but that's not my area of the law. But I'm not sure that we're going to be able to get there through attorney ethics either. And I'm just wondering whether any real discipline for them here is going to fall through the cracks. After all, there is an argument for Seth Williams to make that he can't really discipline these guys because they didn't work for him.
And he said that as
when they engaged in the conduct that we're all talking about here. And I actually think that's a pretty good argument. That he, you know, have you ever heard of an employee being punished or terminated or disciplined for something that they did before they arrived at the job? Now, there's some circumstances where if an employer finds out something after someone is hired, that if they had known that they would never have hired the person, and it turns out the person lied about it, then people can be terminated for those reasons. Actually, usually on a job application, it says people attest to having not engaged in any misrepresentation and how they present themselves. And if it turns out later that they did lie about their background, then they understand that they can be fired. So you know, maybe there's some way these facts fit into that.
We don't know that at this point.
We don't know that,
obviously.
Yeah.
Let me get Jill from Villanova to join our conversation. Jill, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome.
I still don't understand why Kathleen Kane is under fire. She didn't send the emails. The men sent the emails. She just exposed them. I don't understand why that's considered to be illegal. I understand she got her license suspended, so she's, you know, supposedly working without a license, but that seems almost like a secondary thing. What was the crime that she did? Sounds like there's, I don't know, sexism here against her. Well, that doesn't seem to have been answered. What did she do that is considered wrong?
Well, let me toss this to Bruce. And as I said in my introduction, charged with revealing secret grand jury information and lying about it under oath. Bruce, can you expand on that?
Yes, she is not in trouble for releasing the emails. In fact, there have been calls. I don't understand why she hasn't released them all. Mm-hmm. Commonwealth Court, in ruling last week that the emails are not a public record, said that that the Attorney General has the authority to release all of the emails that are in her control and possession, and I hope she will. I think that that would advance a lot of interest if all of the emails that we're talking about would come to light. No, she is she has claimed that the criminal prosecution against her is motivated by an old boys network trying to protect themselves from the release of these emails, whether you believe that or not. But technically speaking, she's not under any kind of criminal charge for the release. Rather, the allegation is that to get back at one of the three prosecutors that we've been talking about, who was a political opponent of hers, she leaked secret grand jury information that was itself probably contempt of court, and then lied about it under oath before the grand jury, which is perjury. So she's the important charges against her are two counts of perjury, but it doesn't have anything to do with the release of the emails per se.
Sort of parallel tracks in this story. We have a tweet from Kelly says, to me, Kane is a whistleblower. She's been willing to halt racially biased prosecutions. Now she's showing the old boy network up. And I have to say, we've done several shows about this. And Deborah, we get a fair number of calls callers and comments of people that say she's being railroaded here, that she's the whistleblower. She's the one that's calling the shots against the old boys network.
Well, that could be, but for the fact that she also has engaged in conduct that, if true, would be criminal conduct. So I do think I do wonder why she didn't release more of these before she did.
Right.
And I almost think that she might have been protecting them at the time before all of this happened. And we may be dealing with no good deed goes unpunished here.
Bruce, I mean, it does.
Also, correctly, the allegation was that the release of the emails in 2014 was only against Republicans and not Democrats. I mean, there was a real partisan edge
mm-hmm.
at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of the emails involving all of the individuals were released in 2014. And a lot of people felt that it was unfair. I remember saying, you either release them all or you don't release any.
I mean, Bruce, does this say that we have in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania a completely dysfunctional judicial system? Can we go that far?
Well, you'd have to say so. I mean, everything that could go wrong has, and we have not even talked about the fact that the voters set up in 1993 two mostly independent bodies. The voters, by constitutional amendment, attempted to take judicial discipline away from the judges because there had been scandals before involving Justice Rolf Larson and others. And so the voters said in 1993, we want independent bodies, the Judicial Conduct Board and the Court of Judicial Discipline, to handle these matters. They should be independent of the state Supreme Court, and then we can have confidence. And maybe the worst part of all of this is that those so-called independent bodies, at least the Judicial Conduct Board, have been thoroughly compromised. It's turned out that the board cleared Justice Aiken last year, A, he may have known that they did not have all the emails before them. Second, the lead prosecutor at the time had worked for him, and that had not been disclosed, at least not to the public.
Right.
And third, that a member of the Judicial Conduct Board himself had allegedly received and sent the very emails that were at issue. I mean, it was unbelievable. And no one can have any confidence anymore in these bodies that we set up 20 years ago to give us confidence that these things would be handled independently.
So, Bruce, is that where a special prosecutor comes in to do the job that these others were not able to do?
That is why there are calls for a special prosecutor. My question is, who would we trust to appoint a special prosecutor at this point? The calls have been for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to do so, but the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has appointed two special prosecutors already, both of which have, at least there are questions about how they handled the matter. So I don't think that they're a good choice. I'm thinking that at this point you'd want maybe the governor in coordination with the bar associations to do it. I mean, I don't know at this point how you could do it. There have been calls for having the deans of the law schools in Pennsylvania conduct the investigation, and I'm sure they would have zero interest in doing so at this point. But somehow the confidence of the public has to be restored, and I do not know at this point how that is to be done.
You want to weigh on this, Deborah? Then we'll
yeah,
go back
I was
going to
say the governor also, and because we are a self-regulating profession, I think that the Pennsylvania Bar Association would be a good direction to look. We also, several people have used the term that this is an old boys network. Certainly the things that have been engaged in with these emails look to me like what we think of as a locker room or fraternity party, that sensibility. So maybe we want to, this special prosecutor maybe should be female.
Oh, interesting. Let me get
oh,
your...
Yeah, I mean, that it's a very... You know, and we haven't even talked about the fact that when we tried to put two nominees on the court, on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court last year, there was another email scandal and another allegations of gender and race discrimination. So, I mean, it's impossible to know at this point. You get the impression that if you're a white male, an older white male, and I speak as an older white male, that... You know, everyone has exchanged these questionable emails. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Let me get, it looks like George from Wayne to join our conversation. George, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, yes, certainly. Just wanted to comment. There was a statement made earlier that, quote, no one had come forth or as having been offended by the emails. And perhaps that was made certainly with regard to employees of any of the organizations having come forward. But certainly the general public has been thoroughly offended by the emails, so I wanted to get comments on
sure.
that. And then also, so much of this, as has been sort of remarked earlier, so much of this against Kathleen Kane seems to be retaliatory, the taking of the law license and all of that to shut her up and defang her, so to speak, and put her in this position where, quote, the best thing for her to have done would have been to resign right away and so forth. It really is a mess and does not seem that it just seems that as I say that she really has been targeted by the very people whom she was looking to present for having, you know, done wrong deeds.
George, I appreciate the call, and I do want to give – let me toss the second part to you, Bruce, about whether this was retaliatory, the fact that she has had her law license suspended by the state Supreme Court.
Well, I don't – I mean, no one can know the answer to that question. I would like to point out, however, that the judge who was presiding over the grand jury who began the criminal investigation and the prosecutor – independent county prosecutor in Montgomery County who brought the prosecutions, they have no connection to the email scandal. So I'm not really disputing what your caller said, and because I agree that the suspension was unfair, and since I agree that the suspension was unfair, and since almost everyone I know who's an expert in legal ethics agrees that the suspension was unfair, if the public is suspicious of the suspension, how can I blame them?
Hmm.
But I don't believe that the people who brought the actual criminal charges against her had any ulterior motive, because they have no connection to the emails or the people who were involved with the emails.
And Deborah, we're almost out of time.
The prosecutor there is a female.
Is a female, yes, exactly. And Deborah, the question whether the public is offended.
Yeah. So, you know, community standards don't usually come into play when we look at how an employer, what rules they can make. However, these guys are attorneys, and there are two rules in the Pennsylvania Rules of Ethical Conduct that may come into play here so that there
and
could be attorney discipline.
20 seconds.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Rule 2.1, and which disbarment for unprofessional conduct or conduct unbecoming an attorney. Maybe that will work.
Well, on that note, Deborah Weinstein, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. And Bruce Ledowitz, we have to say goodbye. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Time. Sorry we couldn't get to all your comments here. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.